The EMS Garage is a production of EMSRadio.com. You can find us on Facebook, just search EMS Garage. You can find us on Twitter at EMS Garage. Email us, emsgarage@gmail.com, or call us, 303-720-6001.
The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got DC on the phone. They're wanting to know if you can handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Salmon 22 is on scene.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the EMS Garage. It's the weekly podcast. We're back. Had a few technical difficulties over the past few weeks, but I think I've solved them with a new router. Yes, a draft-in router that makes me happy. And plus, I have no kids in my house this week, so my bandwidth should not drop off suddenly. And then I called my DSL provider and said, by the way, my DSL is dropping off every hour, just randomly. Could you come by and fix it? So I guess they did, because I haven't had a DSL drop off in 2 days. So I'm pretty happy. I'm your host, Chris Montero, Geeky Medic, and I'm sure you really care about my internet woes, but man, when you live on the internet, it's tough. It's like an appliance. It's almost like electricity. If you don't have it, you really know when you miss it, and it's tough. So thanks for joining us, and thanks for putting up with all of our technical issues over the past few weeks, and we hope our podcast sounds clearer now. And then, so I posted that classic episode last week, and I went back and listened to it and went, ooh, that's really bad. What was I thinking back then? But, well. So joining me tonight is a panel of, it's a small panel, but I think we're going to have some, we have a couple cool announcements tonight. And then we're going to talk about oxygen and how it hurts people. Well, at least according to research anyway. Joining me first is Mr. Tim Noonan. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you? You're tired, I hear.
Yes. Yeah. Sleep has not been my friend lately.
Sleep. It's overrated. You can sleep when you're dead, right?
Yeah. That was actually a song that was done by Juan Zevon on his last album when he knew he was dying of cancer.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Well, that's pretty
And he
funny.
Also did Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh, I love that song. That's a great song.
Yeah, maybe not when you've got terminal cancer, though. But
it's still a great song.
That he has a twisted sense of, or had a twisted sense of humor.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, though, didn't Guns N' Roses redo that song? It's probably the one. That's probably the version I'm thinking of.
I've always liked the Bob Dylan version that was used in the movie.
Right on. Well, thank you, sir, for joining us, and I promise we won't bore you, and you actually get to make some announcements tonight, so that'll be a lot of fun. So,
mm-hmm.
Right on. Cool.
Thank you.
Right on. Mr. Kyle David Bates, who is also tired, apparently spending some time on hot asphalt.
Yeah, it's been one of those days, one of those weeks, you know how it is.
It can't be that bad.
Oh, no, just usually I'm used to snow and, you know, blizzard. It's like 90 degrees in Buffalo. That just shouldn't be happening.
90 degrees in Buffalo. Now, what's the normal summer temperature, like 80?
Usually, yeah. I mean, we actually broke records this year of consecutive days of being 80 and over, so it's usually like 70s and 80s. Huh. We've never really gone like, it's something like 20 to 30 days, straight days of over 80, and then it's been like 88, 90.
Global warming. That's crap anyway. Well, thanks for joining me, Mr. Kyle David Bates. Also joining me tonight is Mr. James Warmoth. Hello, sir, from Texas, where you guys know hot. You guys are hot.
It's always hot out here.
Right on. How have you been?
Been good.
Are you coming to see us at Expo, by the way?
I'm going to try to. I don't know if I can, though. I'm actually about to have a baby here in about 2 weeks.
You mean you're having a baby or your wife?
My wife's having a baby.
All right, well, that's good. But it's really you too.
I didn't want to defy any laws of physics or anything, so I decided to let her have it.
You'd be a really rich man if you had that baby. Just saying. Well, congratulations. And, yeah, you know, the baby will be like 6 weeks old by then. You'll be fine. It'll be fine. You can just come.
Sure.
Just tell the wife, you know, here.
We'll take him with us. We'll dress him up in a little uniform, give him a badge. It'll be great.
Yeah, the badge will be as big as him. That'll be pretty funny. Well, thanks for joining me. Also joining us tonight is Mr. Kelly Grayson. Hello, sir.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. I didn't call you doctor tonight. Sorry.
That's okay.
You know, if they say it three times, it's true, right?
Is that kind of like calling Beetlejuice?
Yeah. Well, I've heard. If you say it three times, it's true. So you only have two more. But I think it has to be. It has to be completely random and by somebody you don't really know. So anyway.
Can't be solicited. Well, there you go.
Exactly. It's
foiled again.
Well, if I said Dr. Grayson, Dr. Grayson, it just would kind of lose all of its power, right? Oh, well, thanks for joining us. Ooh, and we have one more caller coming on, so I'm going to add him as well, Mr. Sean Eddy. As soon as I add him into the conference, we'll be going here. So, you know, it's been a fun week. I'm really tired, too. It now says he's not online. All right, well, whatever. We're getting ready for the International Roundtable of Community Paramedics, and if you're at all interested in what that conference is about, go listen to Jamie Davis's podcast this week, MedicCast.tv or MedicCast.com, something like that. And you can hear us talking about community paramedics and the International Roundtable. And my week is just starting, unfortunately. I have a little bit of time off tomorrow, and then I work until next Friday. So podcast next week might be a little, how should we say, slim to none. Or you may hear a special report from Jamie Davis and I. So we're actually going to do some podcasting. He's coming. He's flying out to Vail. We're going to do some podcasting and some video stuff while we're there. And you may actually see that on our website. So look for that. It may not be posted next week. So just so you know, we're taking a week off. And then in 2 weeks after that, our 100th show, 100th episode extravaganza. I really don't know what that's going to look like yet, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I've heard rumors that we're going to have several old guests, not necessarily that they're old, but former guests, how about that, that haven't been on in a while, and a ton of other people that want to come on and wish us well. And if you want to wish us well, phone number and give us a call, 303-720-6001. You'd think I'd know that by now. And let us know what you think of the show and wish us happy 100th. Let me tell you, that takes 2 years to get to, doing a podcast a week. And it seems like time flies when you're having fun. And it's been a ton of fun. And I hope to be talking to you at the 200th as well. One more announcement from me this week. We actually have some movement on our EMS research podcast. And we have a couple people that want to start hosting that. So look for that probably debuting sometime late September. And I'm hoping Tim Noonan wants to be a part of that because I think he'd be a good guest on there. He's a research nut, that guy.
Oh, of course.
Right on. I threw your name out there today. I threw you under the bus and you didn't even get CC'd on the email. So whatever. Hey, so Tim, tell us what's going on. I heard you kind of sent in a Tim Noonan kind of way, a ninja email to me and said, hey, this EMS blogger thing we're working on, I think you should break the news. So I'm going to let you break the news. What is EMSbloggers.com?
Well, actually, it's EMS Blogs. There is a separate site called EMS Bloggers that is a little bit different. And I don't know enough about that to say anything about it. But EMS Blogs is going to have several people on it. The guy who writes Too Old to Work, Too Young to Retire, he's kind of like Kelly's alter ego. And Greg Fries and Jim Hoffman and Dave Koenig. And Dave Koenig is the guy who's coordinating all of this. It's going to be much smaller than Fire EMS Blogs, but not excluding Fire Blogs or anything like that, or not excluding Fire EMS agencies where people work for combined agencies, such as Happy Medic, where he's part of San Francisco Fire. So it's meant to have an alternative view on things, not really meant to be in competition with Fire EMS blogs, because we'll still be linking to them. And interesting is that Paramedicine 101, I think, is moving to Fire EMS blogs, and I try to get a few posts a month on there. Lately, they haven't been very good at that. So I expect that A.J. Heitman will not object to my posting on that, because I think he's a little bigger than that, even though I've been critical of him. And
so have I, and I haven't been kicked away yet. So.
Yeah, but you produce a lot more traffic than I do.
Well, but I think that, you know, it's funny, because I think you have to have a thick skin when you get into this business of media and whatever it is. And, you know, if you put yourself out there, you have to at least be willing to take the heat. So, you know, if you're critical of A.J. Heitman and you say something about him, and whether it's true or not, it's your opinion, and I think that's okay. People are critical of me all the time. They tell me, you know, I get occasional comments saying, oh, you know, the show opening's too long. You should just get right to the subject or get right to the point. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's my show. You make your own show if you're that boy, if you want to have it that way. So, you know,
are other shows that have exactly the opening that they want that just aren't as successful. So you've got to take it with that in mind also. Yours is successful, so what you're doing is working.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I guess that's it, but I'm also, we're having fun. That's the whole premise of the whole show. I don't, you know, if we talk about nothing this week, we still had a show and we're having fun, and who cares? And that's what's important. I mean, I read blogs like that sometimes, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, they didn't say much, but they said a lot. And I think that you don't always have to be, you know, you don't have to always be cutting edge or critical, or you can sometimes just be talking about things, and people truly want to be a part of that conversation. And, you know, we can actually be, it's kind of weird, we can actually be in somebody's head while they're mowing the lawn and they have their headphones on and they're out there talking, because I do it all the time. When I was out mowing my lawn this week, had my iPod on and, you know, listening to people talking. And, you know, it's okay, because I enjoy the content. I enjoy the people that are talking, and I hope you enjoy us too. So, you know, you should enjoy what you are a part of and what you create, and that's what I do. So, and I think that's what you guys do too. So, you know, AJ will be fine. I'm pretty sure he's a pretty he's a nice guy. So what do you guys think is the overall, I mean, where do you guys want to go with this?
Well, he describes it as a cooperative more than a network, and I've contributed to several different places, and it seems as if everything is being done the right way here, where the bloggers are coming first. There will be advertising, so I will try to disclose as much as possible any possible conflict of interest from any money that I'm getting, but the money won't be much. Maybe a tank of gas a month, and I drive a compact car. And I was originally writing that, and it looks like oil's going to stay under $80 a barrel, but then Thursday or Friday that went out with a bang.
If you join the Jim's Blog Network, you could afford two tanks of gas for your car.
Or drive less.
Ah, swanky.
How much is that in beer money? I mean, really, that's what we want to know.
It depends on the brand you drink.
It might drive you to drink. Well, you know, and I think it's interesting as we, you know, that's kind of what I'm, I guess that's the vision of what we're trying to do with some of our networks, too. You want to bring together good content and people that produce it. Mm-hmm. And bring them together into one place where people can find it. Yeah, you can go to iTunes.
Too old to work, too young to retire, being part of a cooperative, communal kind of place. because my hair makes his look like a hippie right now, but that's only because mine is very short.
He is slightly to the right politically of Attila the Hun.
So is he libertarian then?
Very.
No, he's libertarian. He's more conservative.
He's more conservative. I'm of the libertarian bent, small L, but too old works. He's dyed in the wool, conservative Republican. Not entirely. You know, with the domination of religious influence over the conservative movement, he's not really down so much with that. But he's old fashioned, hardcore conservative values. And reasoned conservative values. It's not just some knee-jerk reaction. He actually is a tough guy to debate on things.
Wow. I like people like that.
Doesn't mean that we don't.
Because you lose. You know, you debate with him and you lose usually. So.
Or do you just throw your hands up in just frustration, like, oh, I can't debate this guy. He's just too good. He's be like,
you're right.
Oh, whatever.
Okay. You're right. How could I have been so wrong all my life? You are absolutely right. That's what I find myself saying when I talk with him so much.
That's funny. Oh, that's good. So, do you guys have? Are you guys actively looking for other bloggers, or whose real brainchild was it? Just his, or is this just something you guys went? Well, you know, there's this Fire EMS blogs, and we want to do something ourselves that is more focused on the bloggers. I mean, where did you guys get the idea, and where have you? You know, what are you guys doing to get other bloggers in?
I haven't been doing anything. I've been busy with other stuff, and I got this email from Dave, and I thought about it a little bit. It's like, it's going to be a lot of work to move my blog, and I'm kind of comfortable where I am, and okay, I'll do it. And now I'm realizing it's a lot more work than I thought it would be, because the import the blog, simple way of doing it didn't work for me. And then the less simple way didn't work either. And the less simple way than that didn't work, so I'm at the cut and paste everything. I've only got a few more months to go.
Wow.
A few more months of blog posts to cut and paste in there.
Dude, why don't you put a little, why don't you put a note out to some of our listeners? I'm sure there's a dude, I can port over all of your SQL stuff. It's a 4-minute job on SQL.
I think that Dave has been dealing with the specialists, and they have been trying all the usual stuff that works. And I throw a lot of HTML into my posts. And maybe it just doesn't like the length.
It doesn't matter, dude. You just go into the SQL and just, dude, we'll talk after the show. It's so easy. It's so easy. I've had to port over other blogs in my past, and if the WordPress blog thing doesn't work for you, you just go to the MySQL, you run the job and tell it to copy it, you put it in a text file, you go to the other blog, paste it in the other font, and you're up and running in 10 minutes. You shouldn't have to. Yeah, you shouldn't. The technology is there. You know, they can make the $6 million man. They can definitely move your blog over. Come on, dude. It should be so easy. So what's in store in the future then? Do you guys have ideas for events, or are you just going to be just more this place to read blogs?
Right now, I think he's just trying to get something started and develop a presence and, you know, and give people the idea that we're here and we're looking to expand. And, you know, it's an alternative to other blogging networks that are out there. And not just an alternative to Jim's Fire EMS blogs. I intend to still, you know, post stuff on Paramedicine 101. I intend to still link to everybody over there. And, you know, I don't expect that this will change anything, because one of the nice things about the internet world is it's not a zero-sum game. You actually improve things for everybody, usually by linking to other people. So, and there will constantly be an increase in readers on the internet.
Well, when you get it up and running, I mean, give me a heads up, and I'll pimp it mercilessly on my blog.
Yeah, you might be able to get that guy who told you how to run your own crash scene to advertise.
Yeah.
What? Okay, what was that about?
Actually, recently about helicopters and launching helicopters based on mechanism. And he linked to several articles, one of which was one of his at EMS1.com called The Cult of Mechanism, where he described laying down his motorcycle rather than hitting a four-wheel vehicle, which, you know, that's usually the choice that people make. And a guy got on there and commented that he ran the scene entirely wrong, not having been there.
Not only is everyone an expert about someone else's call, but you know, I mean, he was also an expert about the victim, me, and I found it kind of humorous that someone after the fact from off in the blogosphere can critique a call that I actually ran that I was involved in. It's found it kind of humorous.
I love that. Well, so let me. Can we talk? I'm sorry. My blood is now boiling with the idea of launching a helicopter on mechanism alone. Anyway, so what was
so
your
many
take?
Places do it.
It's like saying that you can predict injuries based on mechanism. You can't. It's crazy.
Oh, but God, it is. It's such a widespread belief. It's almost a cult belief. I mean, you have people that, you know, mechanism. You know, if you say the magic word rollover, people will call for the bird. You know, and that still happens. I have had some commenters, you know, defend the way they launch helicopters, and to a certain extent, their justifications make sense. But far, far too many others launch on the flimsiest of criteria.
We should just did a whole topic on that. We actually had two flight medics. Well, we just did it over on our First Few Moments podcast. We actually dedicated a whole episode to that topic. And the fun part is we actually had two former flight paramedics, myself and another colleague of mine. And we are talking about just that thing, how people just freak out when they see a car up on its roof, call the helicopter. Mm-hmm. It's like, I can't tell you how many times I've had patients actually walk out of the ER before I'm done with my paperwork.
Exactly. Now, mechanism tells you where to look and, to a certain extent, what to look for, but it's not the look itself. It's not the assessment. It's a clue to the assessment.
But, index of suspicion.
Yeah, that's right. But we've developed this belief system around mechanism of injury. And I had, you know, in my post, I castigated the people that, as much as said, if you call a helicopter based solely on mechanism of injury, or if your justification is to get your ground unit back into service quicker, you're part of the problem.
But who's teaching that? It's the ground crew. It's the air crew going out and saying, call us. I did it. I was one of those people. Hey, call us. It's great. You know, put us in the air. And as I started learning more about what was going on, as I started seeing what was going on, as I had friends dying, as they're, you know, finding the ground at, you know, becoming a lawn dart, you know, at a high rate of speed. And so things going, you know, this isn't always worth it. And, you know, I mean, there are times where, you know, I'll tell you flat out, there are times that we landed on scene, the care I gave that patient, the rapid transport saved their life. I will tell you that. I can also tell you that more times than that, I made no difference. And one of the reasons why I love the aeromedical industry is, well, not only because, you know, people be, you know, going, you know, gravity, you know, taking over in a lot of these cases, but the other aspect is that they didn't need this care, and my skills were going to pop because I basically would sit there twiddling my thumbs as we flew into the trauma center.
Exactly. Well, you know, Brian Bledsoe is demonized by a great many, you know, people in the air medical industry, you know, for his stance on the issue. And what they lose sight of the fact is, you know, Brian was an ex-flight medic. He was he worked for CareFlight. He was medical director of some of those systems. this is a personal issue for him because he doesn't want to see, you know, he thinks we're risking, you know, valuable people needlessly. And if it takes on, you know, the aura of a crusade, you know, so be it. It's a good crusade to be on.
Well, look at the last 2 weeks in the air medical industry. We've augured two more in. I mean, when is it going to stop?
In the past 6 months, starting in February, there have been 6 air medical crashes, 16 fatalities.
Oh. Yeah. Well, the overwhelming sentiment on my blog was for the people who defend the practice were, you know, better safe than sorry. Well, you know, my points are it's not safe, and how many of our brethren we're going to have to kill before we're sorry.
But, you know, something. Look at the other aspect, though. Let's go from another standpoint of a similar approach, because, you know, I've been in the shoes, I've been in the flight suit before, but let's go from another approach. How many paramedics have died responding to calls in their ambulances? We just had another one go, you know, that was just killed.
Okay, but not nearly as many.
No, I agree with you, but, you know, there's some things that are going on.
We need better documentation of the fatalities on the ground because we don't have accurate numbers. There was something a few months ago about that, and I posted on it, and it'll take me forever to find it right now, but that is something that we need to look at a little bit more closely and try and figure out what is the fatality rate per mile traveled and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
That was part of Brian's... I'm sorry, I was interrupting someone. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Kelly.
You know, part of Brian's citations in his articles on the subject address that very thing. It's true that a good deal many more ground medics die in crashes every year. But when you compare the number of ground transports and miles traveled, when you factor those things in, helicopter EMS is far, far, far more dangerous.
Oh, I definitely agree with you, definitely.
And a much higher per capita number of deaths in helicopter EMS and by ground. There's no question. It's one telling statistic. I think he said at some point, I can't remember the exact figures, but he said if you work, you know, 40 hours a week for a helicopter EMS system and work for 10 years, your chances are about 50% of being in a helicopter crash based on the 2008 figures. That's not good odds.
Yeah, well, the NTSB hearing back in 2008-2009, Dr. Ira Blumen went through the numbers on that and showed that if it were a separate job category tracked by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that full-time flight crew, dedicated EMS flight crew, would be the most dangerous job in the United States.
Yeah.
That's something that people don't think about when they call for the helicopter, saying, better safe than sorry. You don't call for somebody juggling chainsaws saying, better safe than sorry, and they probably have a better safety rate safety level than just about everything else, because you don't start doing that unless you're really good at what you do.
But look at the costs.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's a... I mean, one thing we talked about over on our other podcast was that there was a patient that was burned. He was at a regional hospital or a satellite hospital. They wanted him to go to the university hospital. They wanted him to fly. They contacted the university system who was accepting the patient to be admitted. They said, no, don't fly him. He's stable to go by ground. Give him some more analgesium, send him by ground. So they actually shopped for a helicopter, found a private company that would transport him by air. He was admitted with, I believe, a 1% burn. He was discharged the next day. His hospital bills were about $4,200. His transport bill was over $12,000.
Yeah, and after, call it a 40% or a 50% burn. What about a burn once the patient's fluid needs and airway management has been met is time sensitive?
Absolutely. I think it's...
nothing about it that's time sensitive. You know, get it done within 20... You know, get the cleaning and debridement and so on and so forth, the specialized burn care done within 24 hours it's not a life or death thing at that point. And once you've taken care of the stuff that any ground crew or rural ER should be able to handle.
And I've flown with a sunburn, and it hurts. That vibration just vibrates, and it hurts. I can't imagine having a 50% burn.
You know, flew a sunburn. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I would have come through the internet right there and just beat the people.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Kelly.
I can one up that briefly. I got a call from a friend about 48 hours ago. They in metropolitan Tucson. I guess you can consider Tucson a metropolis, but anyway, in downtown Tucson, they called a helicopter to fly a shooting victim 8.6 miles. 8.6 ground miles, non-rush hour traffic. They called a helicopter for this guy. And you can't tell me that kind of situation, you know, they could have been completed their paperwork, and if they'd have done the scoop and scoot and done their ALS on the way, they probably could have had their paperwork done and finished a couple of cups of coffee by the time the helicopter arrived with the patient.
You know, well, the thing is, when you get helicopters involved, people forget everything they know about medicine, risk management, and travel time. And they just say, ooh, magic helicopter.
One of our new medics called a helicopter the other day for a rock-solid, stable diabetic patient whose sugar had been raised with D50. IV glucagon. We're out of D50. But gave him IV glucagon and D5W. And the guy was stable, conscious, talking. And I walked to the back of the scene because our agency sent me to help coordinate and set up the LZ. I walked to the back of the truck, saw this guy, and turned out he'd been refusing the helicopter from the moment they left the scene all the way to the LZ. Yet they called for our bird. when the flight medic stopped, you know, he walked past me, said, "Kelly, what do we got?" And I said, I really don't want
refusal.
I don't want anything more to do than this with this than what I've already heard. You just have to hear this for yourself. I'll be over there by the LZ." and 5 minutes later, he had a refusal in the helicopter. You know, people just, they get infected with rotariasis and they just lose all their training and common sense.
That, I'm incensed almost by that. I'm just, you know, I was going to give you a couple statistics. District, Kelly, I think you're breaking out. Can you hear me? Well, Kelly, talk over the rotors. That's right. So what I was, but here's a couple of. Here's a statistic for you that in our area, we have a large portion of I-70 that runs through here, 75 miles an hour. And according to 2007 statistics that were done by our local public health department, epidemiologists, people that are way smarter than me, that you're twice as likely to die in a rollover accident here as you are in other portions of Colorado. Crazy, right? Well, and it's all straight highway. I mean, there's a couple curves. It's in the mountains, big deal. But it's not, you know, it's not Texas interstate driving, you know, straight, and you could fall asleep while doing it. But most of the people that crash on dry roads in our area, it's bad. But
how
you know
many
what?
Of them go over the cliff there, because I've driven through there, and it's beautiful country. But if you go over the side, that rollover is nothing like the rollover into the median.
We don't have any cliffs
at the section of I-70 near me.
We don't have cliffs. We have small hills here. It's not, you know, if you go further, like toward the real mountains, you know, our elevation's like 6,500 feet. Yeah, we're not hugely mountainous. We have rolling hills here. It's nothing. Well, okay, rolling hills at the elevation of 10,000 feet, whatever. Anyway, so whatever you call that.
Height.
Right, exactly. So,
but what kind of numbers are they basing this on?
Small
sample?
No, it's all the traffic accidents that happened in a 5-year period compared to all the other traffic.
How many rollovers is it?
I have no clue. I didn't ask. Of course you would ask that because you're a researcher. And I don't know. It just sounds really good, doesn't it? Anyway, but the point was, they're dead. I don't need a helicopter for dead. Because they're dead. Mm-hmm. So the idea that, okay, the mechanism of the rollover... Tim, you're breaking out. Doesn't mean it doesn't have what?
I mean, it doesn't happen.
Well,
true. A helicopter for a dead person. I've been on a scene where they did that. We were 8 minutes from an excellent trauma center, and we sat on scene for 30, 40 minutes waiting for the helicopter. And we were doing compressions by the time the helicopter got there. The only reason they flew the guy was because he was a teenager.
No, I will. I'll confess.
Yeah. Dad's dead.
Early in my career, I called a helicopter and flew a traumatic cardiac arrest patient. Back before I realized that traumatic cardiac arrests simply don't survive. But I called the helicopter for him anyway, and the call actually went fairly smoothly, but with the expected result, a patient declared once it got to the hospital. But live and learn.
Right.
Well, the kid on my scene, they worked him another 45 minutes at the hospital before they finally gave up on him, but he had no blood left in him because he got stabbed too much. Nothing you can do about that.
But when in our industry are we going to recognize that, I'm sorry, it's a wheelbarrow. It's ones with egg beaters and it's ones with wheels. And you choose which one is going to take the patient there quickly. And what is most beneficial for not only the patient and the safest thing for the patient. We need to get over this helicopter-itis that we have, and it's crazy. You know, we have helicopters opening up all over with no real reason to do it, and they're flying in weather that they shouldn't be, and it's just crazy.
Oh, there's a very real reason for doing it.
Well, I know why.
Because it's lucrative.
Yeah, there's money.
It's lucrative.
I know who's going to get
this whole proliferation stems from the... Well, this whole proliferation of medical helicopters can be traced right back to the increase in Medicare reimbursement. Grew like wildfire beyond that date. And my issue with it is you never see, or you, I won't say never, you rarely see medical helicopters based where they can do the most good. You never see them based in rural settings or out on the frontier because, quite frankly, the call volume isn't enough to support financially a helicopter EMS system out there.
Actually, in the Philadelphia suburbs, they are working a little bit toward that, but they're still way too close to the city.
You know, in Phoenix, I think there are some of you may know Jeff Brocious, who worked as a flight medic in Phoenix for certain several years. I think he told me there were 9 helicopters based in Phoenix. He has been on scenes where there were more helicopters on scene than there were patients.
Oh my goodness!
And people in areas of the country who don't experience that think it's no wonder that they vigorously defend their use of the helicopter because they don't realize that kind of thing goes on in areas outside their own sphere of experience. But it does happen, and it's got to stop. You can walk from Dallas to San Antonio on helicopter road.
You can walk now.
Too many of them.
Well,
I see. Hyperbole, but that's my stock and trade. You could walk from Dallas to San Antonio on helicopter road. There's a lot of them.
That's funny.
Well, the East Coast also.
And I guess I'm a little annoyed that it continues to happen over and over again, and we don't have any. You know, there was this NTSB, you know, Senate hearings, blah blah blah. And it was pretty, I had Stacy on from Safe Flight Med, and she is a great speaker. I need to have her back on at some point. But, you know, her whole thing is they can be safer. as far as an industry, you know, night vision goggles, dual engines, and blah, blah. I mean, she had this whole list. She has a whole list. From my point of view,
look at Canada, their crash rate compared to ours.
But they have four. It's like their submarine fleet. They have one. I mean, you know. No. But they don't use them. They don't see the... Sorry. The Canadians are going to shoot me now. Sorry, my Canadian pals. Rob Terrio, we love you.
Canadians are too nice. Canadians are too nice to shoot you. They'll just use harsh language.
That's true. Well, I'll see a whole bunch of them this coming week.
Look at Europe. You've got plenty of helicopters over there, and they don't crash the way they crash over here because they do things a little bit differently. They think about how they approach things.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the NTSB hearing, they came out with suggested safer standards, but those things are not requirements yet.
No,
I don't think they're able to make them requirements. I think the FAA would have to do that because of the way the laws are written, that if there was a case, either Supreme Court or appellate court, that looked at this and said, no, this is something that is interstate commerce, so the state may not regulate it. And it gets
that may wind up changing.
That's the problem with the NTSB is they're all suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
That's one issue. Flight 3407 that went down here in Buffalo has been a big thing, if you've been following it. But a lot of the NTSB suggestions were actually made into law with the FAA just recently. So that's what it has to take. As you pass by the FAA. And this is for, you know, pilots of commercial airlines. You know, not the aeronautical industry, but there's been a lot of changes coming down the road based on that. But yeah, it had to go from NTSB to the FAA. And the problem with the aeronautical is NTSB has been suggesting things for a very long time, but the FAA just hasn't picked up on them. The lobbyists are there, and it's just the biggest issue.
And you have places like Maryland State Police where they have all sorts of exceptions to the rules because they don't get paid by Medicare. They get paid by tax on the driver's license or the registration. So all their money comes from the resident, but they do a great job of politicizing it. They get all the firefighters and EMS people out, which are generally the same thing because it's a fire-based EMS system statewide. And they, say that you've got to have this. This is essential. And it's one of the smallest states in the country. They've got plenty of helicopters. They've got twice as many as they need.
And they also fly under different rules. They fly under Part 91 as opposed to Part 135 of FAA law. And Part 135, just to give you an idea, is what FedEx flies under. It's aircraft for hire, where Part 91, you're dealing with, law enforcement missions and stuff like that, where Part 135, you have, certain parameters to fly under. The clouds couldn't be, have to be so high, you have to have so much visibility, night, day, mountainous area, where, Part 91, they can do whatever they want to do. And then you have
their problem of only having one person in the back with the patient, which if you're calling for a helicopter because you think that the patient is unstable and needs a lot of critical care, maybe more than one person should be taken care of alone in the back. If I've got an unstable patient, I want somebody else to ride in the back with me and help out if possible. Every other helicopter in this area, I think, has two people in the back. Now, they did, with the crash of Trooper 2, they did have a borrowed EMT from the ground, and that didn't really help out. It just increased the fatality rate from their crash.
Well, that's my biggest criticism of my own employer's system. Is that all our helicopters are single medic, it's basically a very fast ambulance. We have, they're all good medics, and to Acadian's credit, they don't push you to call a helicopter inappropriately. They genuinely don't want you calling for unnecessary flights. Aside from RSI. And glide scopes and slightly more advanced protocols and technology, they're not significantly more capable than a critical care ground unit or one of our regular medic units. They're just fast. So,
a lot of times they're not fast because there are so many delays.
Exactly.
But in the Philadelphia area, they have actually done a pretty good job of trying to speed things up, and a lot of times scenes go well. It's generally the ground providers who are slowing things down because they want to do everything before getting the patient into the helicopter.
Yeah,
but the thing is, everyone says it slows down, but, you know, you have to take the time on the ground to prepare your patient. You know, I've had, you know, situations where, you know, we hurried things into the helicopter, and when things go bad at, you know, 1,500 feet, things go bad fast, and, you know, you've got to have people secured, because it's very hard for you to get out of, you know, if you're in an ambulance and a seatbelt comes undone, it's easy to pop it back in for the patient. If a seatbelt comes undone in a helicopter, it's actually a pretty extensive amount of stuff you're going to have to do. Tell the pilot you know, first of all, you got to make sure you're okay to unbuckle. You've got to, you know, talk to the pilot, make sure you're okay to unbuckle. If you're doing that, your hands are off your communication, so you're not going to be communicating, and it's a lot harder than most people think.
But that's something that needs to be communicated to the people who are calling for a helicopter. They're calling because they want everything to rush, 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 everybody run, 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 and we're not doing that. If you are a responsible patient care provider, you are not rushing. Some of my least stable patients, I have been pulling back on the stretcher to keep people from rushing along and, you know, pulling out IVs and stuff like that. If that's the case when you're going by ground, it's no less the case when you're going by air. And people say, okay, it's so many minutes flight time, therefore I am cutting off all this transport time. And they're not. They're actually increasing the transport time because they're calling for the helicopter, then they're setting up the landing zone, then they're, you know, doing the treatment on the ground and preparing the patient to go in the helicopter. Then they're launching. Then you get to the helipad at the hospital. Maybe you're on the roof. Maybe you're on the other side of the hospital. You have to get from there to the trauma center. And the people who call for helicopters rarely think of all these time periods when they're adding it up. While you could put the patient in the ambulance, do some of the stuff that you would be doing on the ground, waiting for the helicopter while you're en route. And
pull
up at the emergency department at the trauma center and go straight in there.
Completely agree with you, Tim. But can I be the callous one on the podcast? Well, okay, maybe not. You guys have already kind of done that a little bit. But you know, when as a society are we going to do a couple things, and especially in our industry, to go, you know what? It's and we kind of live on this anyway, but we still then, it's like when we turn somebody's emergency into ours and we launch a helicopter and say, ooh, you know, they need the best care and that must be better care than what I can provide as a paramedic. And so we launch a helicopter because it's glamorous and it's cool and blah-de-de-blah. But you know what? People die every day. They die every day in other countries too. And people are going to die every day here. And it's, I don't think that we would find that it's tremendous, that there's a tremendous time-saving advantage over, especially in an urban and even semi-suburban rural setting, frontier and other things. I think that you can make a case there. But by and large, the care, and sorry flight nurses, the care isn't a lot different because it's such a small space. You can only do so much. So paramedicine has evolved over time to become a very sophisticated, highly trained healthcare provider. We can do the same job that they can do flying through the air as we can do on the ground. But it's more glamorous and, okay, so what? Big deal. People die. Let them die. It's not our emergency. They can die. It's okay. Oh, sorry.
Part of it is that people are afraid of taking responsibility for the care of the patient themselves. So by calling for the helicopter, they are transferring the responsibility to the helicopter. So they can say, we did all we could. And when you hear people say that, you want to run away from them. They are scary people. They are dangerous people. Anybody who's saying, we did all we could, doesn't understand what patient care is about. It's not a quantity thing.
it's a quality thing.
Right.
That they're looking at the responsibility and saying, I'm washing my hands of it, I punch this pilot, have nothing to do with this. If this patient has a bad outcome, it is not anything to do with me. And sometimes that decision delays care to the point where they have caused the bad outcome.
And a great deal of it stems back to our collective hero complex in EMS. You know, you won't find a paramedic. I mean, as a profession, we have this hero complex. Part of it's the people we recruit, the way we recruit them into EMS on this prospect of saving lives and stamping out disease and pestilence and snatching someone from the jaws of the Reaper at least twice a shift. and that's why, raise your hand if you didn't get into EMS for that reason. You know,
I got in it for the lights and siren, dude. Come on.
Well, and I got in it for the chicks and the money, and I was disappointed.
I got in it because my ex got pregnant, and I said, I need to know what to do in an emergency because this has me totally freaked out.
Okay, that was a little TMI.
Oh,
Tim.
Man, so you're an TMI. Outlier.
Little TMI.
I have always been an outlier.
But I think one of the reasons helicopters are, we're so entranced with the helicopters and the glamour, for lack of a better word, of flights, is it's kind of part and parcel of the whole never give up and it's the same reason people still work multi-systems trauma codes. You know, I still have colleagues that work a car accident victim who has multiple systems trauma and apneic and pulse at the scene, and they consider it a good call. You know, and my partner asked me the other night, he said, why don't we ever work any of those? And I said, because number one, I don't work trauma codes. You know, when you work a trauma code, your chances of becoming a trauma code increase exponentially, and that's not worth the risk of a 1 in 10,000 shot of resuscitating a vegetable temporarily.
If you're an agency that's still resuscitating blunt force trauma death, you need to be slapped, and you need to go talk to your medical director. Just saying.
Well, there's a lot of medical directors that still do that. As a matter of fact, there are some I know of. You know, I'm not going to name them out loud, but there are certain flight services whose criteria for a flight is traumatic cardiac arrest. Now, they don't want you calling for medical cardiac arrest, but traumatic cardiac arrest where speed, you know, to the trauma center might make a difference. They want you calling for that.
There's only about 4% of the agencies actually do that.
Yeah. I mean, not many. Not many. I'm not saying that's the spread, but if you fly traumatic cardiac arrest, it's not only is that ludicrous, you know, I question why you even work them, period. They just don't survive.
Protocols.
Yeah, protocols. Well,
protocols like the helicopter are a way of getting rid of responsibility. I followed the protocol. I'm not responsible for what happens.
I have critical thinking in a brain when you have protocol.
Yeah. Well, the Nazi SS, were about getting rid of responsibility for that. I was just following orders. And while this is a minor version, and, you know, I'd have to be stealing Kelly's hyperbole there to, keep it entirely along the same lines as the Nazis, but that is what we're doing. We're doing just a minor version of the same thing. We're saying we can't deal with responsibility. We're irresponsible. Save us from responsibility. Give us a protocol. Give us a helicopter. Give us something, but get us out of here.
Man, what happened to oxygen?
And now, Curtis.
We'll talk about that some other week.
And I got so hyped up about talking about oxygen.
James, what were you saying? You were hyped up about what now?
I got so hyped up all week about talking about oxygen bad, and then we're talking about helos. For me, in the transfer side, there is one point that I'd like to make
about calling a helo for things. And that is, because I work on the transfer side, is a lot of times the local 911 provider will call to have a helicopter fly a patient 10 miles to the local ER, and then less than an hour later, we're transferring them 2.5 hours to the nearest trauma center by ground in the back of the ambulance. And yes, they've been to the ER. They have had initial stabilization done at the ER, but I'm still in the back with them for 2.5 hours all by myself going to the nearest trauma center, which for us is about 2.5 out. And so, I question why we called the ambulance. I question why we called the helicopter for that 10-minute ride to the ER, and then I'm in the back with them for 2.5 hours going up to a trauma center.
Ignorance.
No, I think
don't know what they're assessing. They're afraid of making the decision. And it's, this looks bad. We better call a helicopter.
Well, I don't know. I can almost defend the calling of a helicopter for that specific situation, because when you are
for
working
for the 10-minute ride.
Well, not necessarily for the 10-minute ride, but calling the helicopter for a short trip and then Kyle having to take someone out 2.5 hours by ground. Obviously, the patient was stable to go by ground. But you don't know that to a certain extent. You're not sure of that until, they've been checked out by the doctor and all the diagnostic studies have been done. So I don't see it really unusual that a patient brought to one hospital by helicopter and then transported somewhere far, far away, much farther away by ground as being unreasonable. You have a guy you have a patient who's been assessed to a far greater degree than what we're capable of in the field, and a decision was made there that the patient was stable. So, I can understand to a certain extent them that kind of situation.
One thing that I'd like to mention is when y'all were talking at the very beginning about these systems that call helicopters based on mechanism of injury. The system where I currently reside is very much like that. They hear there's an MVC rollover and it's greater than 5 minutes from the ER. The bird is in the air before a single unit is on scene. It happens. And so when y'all started talking about that initially, I had my mic muted and I was just shaking my head and going, God, that's us. not me personally, because I'm not the 911 provider, but the 911 provider that services this area, they do that routinely.
And Tim gave us the perfect segue to Oxygen Bad. Inadvertently, he invoked Godwin's law. He invoked Godwin's law, and everyone knows once you mention Nazis in the discussion, thread's over. So we can move on to Oxygen Bad if we have time for that, or save that for.
Podcast. We're at an hour, but I'm game for whatever, because we really didn't record anything last week and nobody will get anything next week, so I'm game for whatever if you guys are. But sure. I think that I just love this topic of talking about helicopters, and I don't know, Tim, if it's so much ignorance as
it's willful ignorance.
I hate to qualify it all as that. I think that we have done a gross disservice, and I've said it a billion times on this podcast, so I'm not going to repeat the whole diatribe, but to say that I don't think that we allow our field providers to be as thinking as they could be, or we educate them. And notice I say educate versus train. We don't educate them to the level that they need to be in order to be making those decisions, because that would be game changing for our industry. And we're not at a place to do that yet. We will someday, but so, when you have somebody going out and saying, I couldn't do this, or, we called the helicopter because the patient looked sick, they just aren't educated. We don't educate ourselves well enough in the healthcare field to really allow us to have an understanding of the physiology behind what is really going on. If we all knew, if we had educated all of the EMTs and paramedics in the United States to say, if you're working a blunt force trauma arrest, you are dumb, go home and pound yourself silly in the head, then we would stop doing that practice, and we would find medical directors that agreed with that. And all the other medical directors, those dinosaurs that they are, will go away. And it will take time, but we are the product of our own making, and we've kind of done it to ourselves.
Well, you look at the people coming out of Dr. Bledsoe's lectures. When he talks about stuff, he presents them with data to back it up. Here's research that shows that this is the right way to go. People walk out of there and they say, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's going to kill people. Now, Dr. Bledsoe is one of the smartest people in EMS, and he is one of the people who is not afraid to upset people by saying, there's a problem with this. And he's constantly criticized by people who want things to not change. Yet, they're going to these lectures, they're listening, and they're not taking it in. They're hearing things that they don't want to hear, so they're rejecting it. So when I say willful ignorance, people are presented with this information, and they see it, they hear it, and they reject it. You look at the post that Kelly did. Was this helicopter necessary, I think was the title of it. And you look at the comments. I wrote a post just about the comments, really, because some of the comments are so ridiculous. One guy looked at it and he says, I find this article insulting. Well, obviously he didn't read the whole thing, because if you read the whole thing, you realize that there was no personal attack in there. It was supposed to be a reasoned approach linking to several other articles that explain why we overuse helicopters. Yet this guy's response is, I find this article insulting. And he finishes up with, and yes, I have lost friends in air medical crashes, but I still continue to fly and support our system. It's like,
I find that insulting. You know, my article my blog wasn't intended to be a slap in the face of air medical providers. It was a call to, you know, for God's sakes, these are our brethren in EMS, and we're subjecting them to needless risk for little or no reason. It's irresponsible, and it's not doing our flight medics and nurses and pilots any good to call out for to call them for these silly reasons.
People criticize Dr. Bledsoe. He finished up his article with, at some point in my life, I have met or spoken with at least 5 people who later died in medical helicopter crashes. They were all great people and died doing what they love. We owe it to their legacy to assure that not a single flight nurse, flight paramedic, pilot, or patient dies unnecessarily. Yet, people look at him as saying he is against the patients, against the pilots, against the flight medics, and against the flight nurses. He's not. It's the people listening who are interpreting it with their own biases because they don't like what they're hearing. They want to hear helicopters good, helicopter even more. And we need to decide when the helicopter is appropriate, not ban helicopters, not call helicopters for everything. And people just I had one flight medic I worked with said, you're endangering our organization by not calling for a helicopter. What if something goes wrong? I said, well, using that logic, I should call a helicopter for absolutely everything, because how do I know what's stable?
Right. I mean, and the thing is what they're dying from, it's ridiculous. It's all stuff that is preventable. It's either, you know, poor decisions on the pilot in terms of weather, you know, looking at weather and trying to, I don't know if you've listened to any of the recordings from Trooper 2 crashed. I mean, that was actually a good friend of mine.
Yes.
Trooper Mickey Lippi, he and I were in the same fire department down in Baltimore, Owings Mills. And I listened to the phone call from SysCom to the pilot. And one statement that the pilot said was, well, I forgot who it was. Well, if they're out flying, I guess we can do it too. And right
but
there...
But somebody had turned that call down before them.
Not... Yeah, you're right. It was one of the other troopers that did call it down. You know, on there. And it was ridiculous. You know, it was just... it was a bad decision. And unfortunately, you know, I lost a friend when we've lost people. And that's... And similar to what happened with the... you know, there was a crash just recently, and I can't remember, I think this was out west, where the rotor fell off, you know, on a maintenance flight. And it killed the, you know, killed the pilot and the maintenance, you know, the mechanic. You know, it's, yeah. Just, it's stupid things that are going on. It's not like, you know, being in the military where you're in a known dangerous job because people are shooting at you. They're trying to kill you. You know, or blow you up, you know, and that's an acceptable risk. The stuff we're doing is it's unacceptable. The reason why they're dying, there's no excuse. And people hear the stuff and they don't want to hear it because they want to think of what they're doing is noble, what they're doing is grand. And in a lot of aspects, it is. But what we're dying, you know, I tell my friend, I said, you know, fly safe and safely fly. You know, because it takes, you know, we had a rule called, you know, 3 to go, 1 for now. You know, mm-hmm. Which meant that all three of us had to agree to fly, and one person felt unsafe, you know, not to do it. And, you know, there was a couple times I called no, and luckily, you know, our pilots were good with it. And there was one time that we went into inadvertent instrument flying conditions. We went into a cloud, just came out of nowhere, and it was the most scary. And it was right after Mickey was killed, so it's like going through my head of like, oh my God. And unfortunately, the pilot's like, well, we're going to try to go around it. And we were able to get around it, but I was like, I looked at him and said, you know, this isn't worth it. This is not worth it.
Well, but you, it sounds like you were at a part of a service. You know, I guess when I look at services that are driven by profit and their entire need is to do flights. So let's say you're the operations manager and the vice president comes to you and says, you need to do more flights. You're not making your quota. You got to be out there doing more. Thus, the flight, you know, the operations manager then goes to all the people on the staff and says, hey, we've got to be doing more flights. Your jobs are at risk. You know, you guys have got it. So then you just kind of slide that safety envelope just a little bit more, and you keep sliding it a little bit more. So whereas, where maybe you would have said no before, maybe now it's like, well, you know, we probably can take this flight. It's probably no big deal. You know,
but Maryland State Police Aviation is not for profit. They keep pushing themselves. They go out and they say, call us, call us, call us. Chris, and Dr. Bass and Dr. Scalia both were saying that it is important to fly all these patients. They were opposed to cutting back on the flights. Flights have been cut back by more than half, and there has been no increase in fatalities.
Okay, this is truly the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I kid you not, this is not streaming on the internet, and I'm sitting here on my Twitter account, and I just got a new follower, and guess who it was? Air Medical Charters. Literally just this minute.
Me
I'm like,
too.
It's kind of
just now.
It's scary. I'm like, too. What in the world is going on? All of you did? Okay, that's a little scary.
Not me, because yeah. I don't have a Twitter.
Yeah, I got Twitter, but they don't like me, I guess. So I
okay, good. Okay, good. Well, at least
maybe
I was like,
big brother
really out there. They really are.
Well, what does that say about the safety factor when we have a helicopter that goes out on a maintenance flight and the rotor falls off?
That's bad. That's a bad thing. I've heard.
Well, it needed maintenance.
I mean, I...
Sorry,
you know,
that's really
man.
Callous.
You
that's
know, I just want to mention, you know, I've worked for other private services in which, you know, maintenance was kind of, because it's a private for-profit service, that a lot of times the company made the decision that the ambulance maintenance was going to slide a little bit just so that, you know, we could keep profits up. But if the ambulance breaks down, you pull over on the side of the road and you're okay. When the helicopter breaks down, you're going for a bad ride.
Yeah, I think a lot of it also, you know, I mean, Chris, you know, we always say, oh, they're, you know, profit-driven. And, you know, I'm not going to say that doesn't happen. But I also think it's a pride thing. you know, on that. And that's a big thing. And especially, you know, the minute you add a pediatric call onto it, they freak out, especially the pilots aren't supposed to know. The industry says the pilots are not supposed to know what the call is for. All they want to know is, there's a call, it's going to here, it wants to go to there, can we go there? And they're not supposed to know, because when they do, they can make dumb, you know, decisions, and I've seen it happen. I've seen, you know, the pilot actually looking outside going, oh, I think maybe I can make it, maybe not, you know. Oh, it's a kid, so we'll give it a shot. And they shouldn't, they're not supposed to know that.
Right.
And, I mean, the infamous phrase they always say is check your pride at the door. And I almost compare it to, like, you know, that paramedic who's trying to get the, you know, to get the tube. You know, they're trying to intubate it. And they can't get it.
Again,
It's a pride thing, and the same thing happens in the air medical industry. We can get there. You know, I'm sure we can get there. So and so is out flying. You know, and that's where we've got to stop. And there is a process that's out there that when one helicopter turns it down, there's one called helicopter shopping. That when, let's say, a dispatcher or a hospital wants a helicopter, you know, they call the local, you know, air medical provider, and they may say, no, we can't go. And what they'll do is they'll call another one, and they'll go around and find a helicopter that will take the call. And that's where we're starting to see a lot of the fatalities. What they've done is there's actually it's all voluntary, once again. But there's actually a website that was established that when you turn down a call as an air medical provider, you're supposed to type in why you turned it down. Now, why you turned it down may be legitimate. It may be legitimate to get another air medical provider. You may have weather in your area. There's areas here in New York, in the valleys, that our helicopters would get weathered in all the time, but everyone else could make it out because it was a local system, you know, for that. So that's something, you know, on that. But the accepting provider is supposed to really contact the other pilot of the other provider and say, why did you turn it down? And that's not always happening.
Wow.
Well, I didn't know such a system was in place, but it sounds like a great idea. As you point out, if it were actually followed.
Is it only in New York or is it everywhere?
No, it's a national program, and it's actually, you have to subscribe. It's very confidential, I believe, and you have to, like, apply to be on. I believe it's free, but you have to apply to get access to it.
Okay.
So not everyone can just see what's going on.
It'll have its own reality TV channel soon.
Well, here's the drawback to the profit driven, and I work for profit driven EMS. I work for a private EMS company, and they're here to make money.
Everybody who has I still think it's possible to make money.
Well, I know, and I think you can do EMS for profit and still render good care to your patients and be a good medic and do a responsible job as a business owner and a care provider. But sometimes that whole for-profit thing works against good care. My friend in Phoenix who's told me tales of arriving on scene. The ground unit is there. They've called for the helicopter, and they have sat on scene for 10 to 15 minutes with this guy, with their patient, with absolutely no stabilization done, just waiting around for the helicopter. And when the helicopter arrives, he and the flight nurse get off, and they go about doing the stabilization and the packaging of the patient that should have been done long before they get there. And meanwhile, there's a ground crew. One of the ground medics is looking pointedly at him, and tapping the face of his watch, you know, like, hurry up, you're dilly-dallying, you need to step it up. All the while, my friend is taking care of the stuff this ground medic should have taken care of in the first place. But you can't say anything to him, and you can't tell him to get bent, which is what he deserves, because they're just going to call the next helicopter service if you do that.
And that's just one of the delays that shouldn't be there with flights.
Yeah. Hey, so let me ask this. What's your guys' feeling on hot loads? It drives me nuts, but just wanted to get your...
It depends. If you've got somebody who is truly unstable and you're calling the helicopter because it's going to make a significant difference in the time they arrive at the trauma center, maybe a hot load is appropriate. It depends on how well the flight crew works together.
It also depends on the type of helicopter. Some helicopters are going to take 2 to 3 minutes to cool, to shut down. They can't shut down for two or 3 minutes, and then they've got to wait before they start it back up again. So, yeah. I mean, I know the BOs that we fly and the BK, a lot of the Eurocopters take time to cool down, to do a cool down before they can shut down.
Well, yeah, we run BK-117s and one EC-135, and I know the BKs take a while to shut down. So we do hot loads fairly frequently. Of course, our medic is very safety conscious about it, and part of our yearly education is a ground crew, flight operations CE. But I think hot loads are necessary. If your justification for calling the helicopter is speed to definitive care, then that makes a hot load appropriate in my eyes. If it's going to take time to shut down the bird and then start it back up, then you're negating part of that benefit.
I think it's more dangerous working on the roadway than it is actually doing a hot load. Hot loads are not the chance of danger is there, but there's so much as flight crew. I mean, that is our area, and you're talking about safety consciousness, and I can be a real jerk sometimes, around my tail rotor, especially on the BK-117 with that low tail rotor. That was my job. I took the back of that stretcher. That was my stretcher. Especially on, grassy areas, stuff like that. So, I think in terms of loading and stuff like that, I did more cold offloads. Now, I will tell you that, that's one thing I did more of, where the offloading, I would shut down. I'd wait for 2 minutes to shut down if the patient was stable.
Well, you're concerned about the tail rotor because you're constantly aware of the danger there, while the people who called the helicopter because they're panicking about the patient aren't thinking about the rotors. They're not paying attention to the dangers on scene. You've got to keep them away from her. You're not being a jerk. You're protecting them.
Yeah, but they don't know that.
Well, that's because they are not aware of what they're doing.
I know. So, which goes back to that original point of, we should be training people better to be doing their job. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think we've really...
The helicopter flight in Tucson a couple of days ago, the 8-mile flight, by the way, was not hot loaded. So apparently they had enough time to shut down the bird on scene, load the assess package, load the patient, start the bird back up for their 8-mile helicopter flight.
Wow. Wrong.
It was like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. It sat on the ground longer than it was in the air. That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think we've beat this topic up a little bit too much. But, I did want to talk about one topic this week that kind of rose to the top and made me smile a little bit, was the lady in Connecticut who Twittered to get help after she was injured. And I read that story and I said, well, it's about time that... So the tweet read, I have a serious injury, need help. Can somebody please call Winding Trails in Farmington, Connecticut? I am stuck in a horrible bike crash in the woods. Mm-hmm. So the Connecticut woman tweeted her way to getting help. Now, if that doesn't tell you that we've entered a new world, I think we ought to have like a Twitter, like @911. That'd be pretty cool.
Oh, did she do this from a cellular phone?
Well, I was going to say, doesn't that then beg the question she had service? But we won't go there.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I'm just looking
at like the people who call up. Can you remind me where I put my cell phone and what you're talking to me on it?
Yeah, exactly.
Your glasses are on top of your head.
Yeah. I know some medics whose documentation is perfect for a Twitter feed.
hurt that, foot. Ow.
Yeah, the way they document and the amount of abbreviations and symbols they use, they can pretty much document an extensive code in 140 characters or less.
Well, and it says in the actual post that it's common for people that if you can't. You may not be able to send a voice call, but you could, you can do Twitter via text. So she probably sent a text message to her Twitter account. I don't know what the exact circumstances were, but it is interesting to think that she did tweet that somehow on a cell phone. And
with my phone, I get a better voice signal most of the time than I do signal for texting or internet access.
And, can you imagine if? Can you imagine if Ashton Kutcher did that? They'd crash the local 911 peace app. They just
or the exact opposite would happen. Would anybody really care? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's that too.
They'd overwhelm the system.
Well, anyway,
they'd think he was punking everybody, and he'd probably die waiting for help.
Well, she had 1,000 followers, and I can't find her at name, so I was kind of hoping that we could find her at name and send her some Twitter follower love, and then that way, next time she crashed, she could actually she'd have more people coming to her aid. No, it sounds like she was actually seriously injured.
I've gotten three new followers since the start of the podcast, and they're all air medical providers. So
that's kind of scary, dude.
Well, if I tweeted such a thing, I really have doubts that I'd survive.
Did somebody Twitter that we were talking about air medical tonight or something?
I don't know. Hey. They're following.
That's scary.
Well, Kelly did write an article recently about this, but I wonder if the woman spelled Connecticut correctly in the tweet, or did she just use the abbreviation?
CT. She put CT. Winding Trails in Farmington, CT. Tell them I'm stuck bike crash in woods, was what the tweet said.
Yeah, I'm next to the tree.
Exactly.
Yeah. It sounds like every 911 service is going to need to have their own SMS mailbox from now on for 911 dispatches.
Probably. Well,
you know, there was the Clackamas County, Oregon, advertised online for a Klingon interpreter for their 911 call center. And it was a true thing. Now, a lot of people interpreted it as a full-time Klingon interpreter. They wanted someone that a PRN person that could speak Klingon for their population of mentally disturbed people who speak in nothing but Klingon. So, but
there are way too many Trekkies in that town.
Yeah, if you're a Trekkie, you can you can finally make it pay.
I will translate your Klingon for you. Excellent.
There are way too many Trekkies in that town. I mean it.
Hey, you're talking to one. Just saying.
Well, if you show up in the patient wearing a red shirt, it's not good.
Or you are.
Or the patient is usually the guy wearing the red shirt. So
yeah. Or the flight crew. Oh, sorry. Bad joke. Sorry. Oh, anyway.
You know, Chris, I am a Trekkie too, but I've never taken it upon myself to learn an imaginary language.
It's real? How do you know it's not real?
Since it's been made into a language, is it still imaginary?
Good point.
Yeah. Well, it's got its own grammar and syntax, and it has all the... it has all the trappings of a real language, so I guess you could call it.
I'll put it to you this way.
And climate, who speaks it?
I'll put it to you this way. You show me a real Klingon, not a made-up one, but a real one, and I'll acknowledge it as a real language. How about that?
And on that note, I think we'll call this podcast to a close. We've seriously digressed from the idea of talking about oxygen all the way to talking about people that tweet and Klingons. So, hey, you never know what the podcast is going to be.
Maybe they need oxygen. That's why they're speaking Klingon.
That's true. That's true.
Sounds like it.
Although they can breathe oxygen because they live among humans. Come on, dude. Seriously.
But maybe they need extra oxygen. That's why they're speaking Klingon. If you gave them some oxygen, you might switch back over to
Vulcan or
something else. Something crazy, something we can understand.
It's a sign of hypoxia.
Exactly.
Yeah, that whole time they were actually like, I mean, they were actually, they couldn't speak. They couldn't get a full sentence out because they needed more oxygen.
They were really choking.
That's not Klingon. That's one word, dyspnea.
And you've just named the podcast.
Yeah, he's not stoic. He's just hypoxic.
They were just choking and you didn't realize it.
Oh, man, that is a great title for the that's going in right now. Well, thank you guys for joining me this week. Kelly Grayson, where can people read your blog and find out more about you? And can they follow you on Twitter and all those good things?
Sure. At Ambo Driver on Twitter, AmbulanceDriverFiles.com on the internet, and A Day in the Life of an Ambulance Driver on Facebook. And you can also follow my podcast as tailored to EMT students called Confessions of an EMS Newbie that I do with Ron Davis, a newbie EMT student. So
now, you're doing that weekly with him?
Yeah,
it's a weekly podcast. I emailed that kid and he never emailed me back.
Oh, well, darn it. I'll light a fire under him. Right. Yeah, we need to
I want you guys on the EMS newbie radio network. I think you guys would be good. It's a really good podcast. I actually like it a lot. You bet.
It's nice to hear a newbie's experiences and kind of vicariously relive some of that thrill of running your first good call. You know, reminds me of way back when.
Yeah, you know, I guess the thing that I often forget is when I see all the new EMTs and paramedics in our service, even sometimes, and they're coming through, and they're excited for calls, and I'm like, oh, man. You know, I mean, I'm just like, I'm so jaded. Every once in a while I get the bug, but it's very rare anymore that I want to do it. Yeah. So it's a good thing. And where did you see, where can you find that podcast?
It's on iTunes, but the blog site where we do blog posts and subscribers to the podcast get practice tips for their exam practicals and study tips and stuff. It's at emsnewbie.com.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much. James Warmoth, where can people find you? You actually have a shorter title for your blog.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's not really a blog. It's more of a web directory for me. I'm not much of a blogger myself. I'm trying to get into it, but I'm having difficulties. You can find me at, the long URL is yellowrubberducky.squarespace.com. The short one is yrdp.us. I think that's kind of harder to remember, though. I actually had to go look it up. I can remember yellowrubberducky.squarespace.com.
Well, yeah, but it's really a cool site, and thanks for, and you actually have Twitter, and are people following you yet? Are you getting more followers?
I had a follower for one day.
You had one follower? Was
for one day, and it was a restaurant. I was like, okay, this is unusual. But, I mean, I don't post that much. I've never had that feeling like, oh, this is something I have to tell everyone about. I've never had that.
I'm a bad Twitterer myself. I'm tweetstipated.
You mean you're tweetstipated? Ooh, that's bad. Now you don't want to tell people about your peanut butter sandwich.
Nothing comes out on Twitter.
I'm eating a peanut butter sandwich now. Maybe later I'll have a glass of milk. That'd be great.
See, I cannot do that. I can't tell people I'm going to the store right now. I just can't.
See, and for me, Twitter's more mine. Yeah, it could be. Twitter's more for me than. You almost named the podcast there. Oh, too bad it's already named. No, I mean, I think for me, it's more about the, because I don't really use it for very much social interaction as much as I would like to. It's more for me just a way to get a brand out and to talk to people that way. That's really what it's about for me. It's not really about that. So James, how can we find you on Twitter?
Actually, if you go to my website, theyellowrubberducky.squarespace.com, it has a direct link there. But if you want my Twitter name, it is Jim361TX.
Whoa. Okay, hang on. Jim361TX. Got it.
Yeah. I make it difficult for you, don't I?
Yeah, you got all these weird things in there.
Big old long URL, you know. Well, the problem is all the names that I want are all taken. It's just aggravating. So I got to come up with something strange and unusual.
Right on.
One thing you're assured of, if you get followers, they're dedicated followers.
That's right.
Because they had to go through the fire to get there.
And they're just as crazy as me. I love it.
Right.
And I just followed you, by the way. So there you go. There you go. Now you have one. Maybe you'll get two after the podcast. Well, thanks for joining us, James. Also, Kyle David Bates, where can people find you?
Website, kyledavidbates.com. You can also find me over at our podcast at firstfewmoments.com, on Twitter, Image Medic, or First Few Moments as well.
Very cool. And I'm sorry we took some of the thunder. Maybe we'll get some cross traffic because we both talked about helicopters. See, but I only put helicopters in the post. I'm not going to say that we talked about helicopters in the title, so you never know, maybe. So thanks. And Tim Noonan, I promise some week we will talk about all that research that you read. I promise. maybe on episode 99. We'll talk about oxygen.
The funny thing is, the stuff that I found most interesting on oxygen was not the recent articles. It's the older stuff. There was one from 1950 and another one from 1976 that make you wonder, why did we ever get aggressive with oxygen? But another time.
And where can people find you?
I still have the blog spot in there, but soon it will be just roguemedic.com. And all of the blogs will be at emsblogs.com. I also contribute to paramedicine101.blogspot.com, but that probably will be just paramedicine101.com. Did I leave the 101 out the first time?
I think you did, but we got it. I think we'll get it. Yeah, they'll understand. Well, thank you guys for joining us, and join us in 2 weeks, episode 99, and 3 weeks after that, episode 100 extravaganza, and I may get crazy and actually try and live stream that one. Probably not, but you never know. But I hear rumors that we'll have lots of former guests. I can't say old because many of them are old. Dr. Wesley will shoot me. And we'll have a lot of people talking about their experiences. And I think that I want to make that podcast, the EMS Garage, talking about, you know, what got you into the industry, why you're excited about it, what changes you've seen, and just make it a fun, we may actually have to tape it over several days, but we'll get it. And tape is such a quaint term, isn't it? It's really not tape. I'm hard driving it. So anyway, whatever.
But you can transfer it to tape.
I could. You could transfer it to tape. Or even better yet, 8-track. So maybe someday.
Hey.
That'd
be groovy.
You know, actually, recently I was down at my mom's house, and we had purchased an old record or a new record player for her that has a USB port, and she can now. So she sits there every day, puts old records onto the computer, turns them into MP3s. I taught her how to do that, and cool. It's very cool. Only thing is, you have to listen to everything, but she loves doing that. So I know she's having a lot of fun with that. So hi, Mom, love you. I know she listened to my podcast. She's my number one fan, and I appreciate that. Thanks, Mom. All right.
Mixmaster Mom?
Yeah, now she's a mixmaster. She'll be in there like, now I can go home and scratch up all her records. She'll be like, no, you can't. But they're like Cher and Elvis and weird stuff like that. I love Elvis, but not Cher. Or Barbara Streisand. Oof, anyway. All right,
of course.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us. Join us next time when we talk more about issues that concern you in the EMS. And I promise you should call us and give us your thoughts on EMS and give us your, you know, we're going to actually put your comments in the show if you call in for the episode 100 extravaganza. You can start doing that now, 303-720-6001. We'll throw them in, and you'll be part of episode 100, and we're really excited about that. Have a great day or night or wherever you're at, and hope to see you soon.